Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Is that music? What is that? Is that a little boogie there?
It's Dr. Carroll.
All right. All right. I hope we all have dined sufficiently. That means had good food. And we're going to start part two for the day. Our panel this afternoon is entitled Using Blogging and Grassroots Media as an Educational Tool to Realize the Xavier Mission, a Discussion of Best Practices and Student Reflections. And so our first part of the panel will be faculty from Xavier. And our second part of the panel will be reflections from students that have engaged in blogging here at the university in their courses. But to frame our discussion this afternoon, we're going to start with an introduction by Mr. Jordan Flaherty, who is the director of the New Orleans Human Rights Film Festival. He's also a writer and a community organizer based here in New Orleans. He was the first journalist with a national audience to write about the Gina Six case and played an important role in bringing the story, to national attention. He's an editor of Left Turn Magazine and has written for a range of publications from The Village Voice to Clarín in Argentina and Germany's Die Zeit. I probably said that totally incorrectly. He's been published in several anthologies, including South End Press Books' Live from Palestine and What Lies Beneath, Race, Katrina, and the State of the Nation, and an upcoming AK Press book, Red State Rebels. He has appeared as a guest on a wide range of television and radio shows, including CNN Morning, Anderson Cooper's 360, CNN Headline News, Democracy Now!, Radio Nation, on Air America, News and Notes on NPR, and many other outlets. He's also produced news segments for Al Jazeera and TeleSUR. So we're very excited that he's here today to start off our panel with framing the discussion. Jordan Flaherty.
Thanks, everyone, so much. It's really an honor to be here. Thank you so much to Dr. Kimberly and to Bart for putting this together, and to the panelists from the morning, and to all of you, and to be at the New Orleans campus that's the smartest student body of any campus in the city. It's like such an honor to be here and to be part of that. So thank you, and thank you to everyone here for being here. And while I want to, thank the organizers especially so much for having me here, being here, I think this is really about celebrating new voices and alternative voices and grassroots voices and grassroots media and new media. So I want to problematize my own appearance here and the fact that I'm here to say that part of what we need to break free from is like this authoritative white male voice, right? So the last thing you need is another white male telling you about like the news. So, I want to bite the hand that feeds me a little bit and say maybe I shouldn't even be here. But since I am here, I want to try and highlight, some of the other voices that aren't here. Who here in the room knows 2 Cent? Yeah. I'm so, and y'all know that they're going to be here, I think maybe in this room, right, on Wednesday night. And so most folks, I guess maybe a lot of folks have seen this video, but I wanted to show this 2 Cent video as an example of, I think, grassroots media that's really vital and beautiful stuff happening in the city. So let's just roll that.
Hurricane Katrina was the biggest national disaster to hit American soil. And nearly 2 years later, this area is still devastated. But you know what? We made sure we preserved it strictly for your tourism. For about $75, you can take one of these many tour buses that's traveling around this city. It looks like there's more money to be paid in devastation and regeneration. If y'all keep paying your money to see it, should we rebuild it?
Thank you.
And, you know, I think Toussaint is so important to talk about because we are in the city where in many ways we have this barren media landscape where the, you know, the Times-Picayune cannot be relied on to cover these things. We have the radio monopoly. Most of the radio is Clear Channel, you know, large media corporation that was a big supporter of the Bush administration. You know, we're sort of buried under this corporate media landscape. And, you know, to give an example, a few weeks ago, there was this Israeli bombing campaign, this devastation of Gaza, 1,300 Palestinians killed, while 13 Israelis were killed, almost half of them by friendly fire. And there was almost no Palestinian voices represented in the media of the city. You had 1,000 people marching in demonstration against this in the French Quarter. And the Times-Picayune refused to cover it, refused to send out a reporter. You had two other demonstrations, one with 300 people, one with 500 people. And then a fourth demonstration of 100 people outside the offices of the Times-Picayune. And still, for all those, the Times-Picayune would not send a reporter to cover that. And so it's so important that we have these grassroots voices that cover that. And so I want to show this one other 2 cent clip. Yeah, that's the one.
Innocents are being killed here. Where is the humanity? Innocents are being maimed here. Where is the world to see? None are spared on these holy streets. A fertile land turned into a killing field. The cemeteries are filled with the souls of the oppressed. The screams you can still hear as they gasp their last breath. Only in death do they become free from occupation. Only in death do they become free from humiliation. Wrong is right and right is wrong at this time in the world. Children are crying over the bodies of their murdered mother and father is the norm. Screaming, please don't leave me here. I don't want to be all alone. For over 60 years, we have been forced to flee. For over 60 years, we have been made to bleed. For over 60 years, we have made to weep. Another Israeli missile strike on the refugee camp. More innocents killed as they slept. More Palestinians killed as we slept.
So without 2 cent, you know, a lot of people wouldn't have been able to see and hear about that. And so, you know, I really want to pay tribute to this grassroots media. And in New Orleans, there's also so much really exciting grassroots organizing and social justice organizing happening in the city. There's an organization called Critical Resistance that wants to abolish the prison industrial complex, that whole intersection of law enforcement violence, of prison violence. And I especially wanted to bring up Critical Resistance because their former director, right up until just after Katrina, was a Xavier alum. So, you know, Xavier is representing in the social justice community of the city. I want to mention Safe Street Strong Communities, which is a grassroots organization that's working for criminal justice reform in the city, doing really amazing work. The director of it, Norris Henderson, spent almost 30 years at Angola Prison. Insight Women of Color Against Violence, another grassroots social justice organization. They started a women's health clinic that is not just doing service providing, but is also an organizing project and doing outreach. So there's you know, this whole network of organizing, of grassroots work in the city that we're not going to get from the corporate media. And it's not just in New Orleans. The corporate media in the entire country is in crisis. Kimberly mentioned in that very, you know, kind of embarrassingly long and super kind introduction, News and Notes on NPR. That's the main sort of NPR show aimed at a black audience, right? And that show's been canceled. You know, it's the only show with, like, black anchors, black producers on NPR. That show's been canceled. The military, despite, you know, we're still early in the Barack Obama presidency, right? So right now the military still is not out of Iraq, but all of the corporate media is out of Iraq, right? So CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS, all of them pulled their media crews out of Iraq. None of them have any anchors in Iraq, right? So we're still having an occupation of Iraq, but there's no media to cover it. I was on this media tour connecting with grassroots media makers around the country a couple months ago, and I was down in Miami, Florida. And I met these two guys that work for the Miami Herald, the big paper down there, and they're like 23 years old, and they've been, you know, working there about 6 months. And they were telling me that how 33% of the staff of the Miami Herald had just been cut, which has been the same, you know, media all around the country, newspapers all around the country. And I just, you know, it was so crazy to me that they were still working there. And I think that just goes to show, like, if you have a job in media, if you work like 10 years, 20 years, start to learn your game, then that's when you get fired. And so the only people that have media jobs is like kind of young people just out of school, you know, who can be paid less and whatever. And then once they start to really learn their game, they get fired. So the whole media is in crisis. And I think, you know, we have to look for alternatives and look for other ways to get these stories out and to hear what's happening, because we're not going to get it from the corporate media. If you're a good reporter, if you do good investigative reporting, there's no one that's going to hire you. There's one international television network that is the only network that's right now hiring reporters, that's expanding their offices instead of cutting their offices around the country, that's doing great stories from New Orleans and also from around the world. Does anyone here know who it is, that the only international television network that's hiring people in the world? Come on, give a guess.
Al Jazeera.
That's right, who said that? I heard over there. Al Jazeera is the only network. And you know, that's funded out of Dubai. And they have had some better stories from New Orleans than almost, you know, than most U.S. networks, and CNN, than Fox, certainly, than NBC, CBS. You know, and I think they have a kind of a different financial model of the economy. That country is trying to find a way to have their economy based on something other than oil, so they're investing in things like TV news. But, you know, again, even that is not sustainable. But I encourage people to, you know, look into Al Jazeera. There's still no cable network in the country that carries it, but you can see it online, you can see it on YouTube. They're streaming video on their own website. And I encourage you to get news about what's happening both in the U.S. and around the world from Al Jazeera and from some of these other sources. Since this whole panel, this whole workshop, this whole day, this whole conference is about Gina, I wanted to talk a little bit about Gina, because I think it has some relevance for, you know, what we're dealing with as a community, for some of these issues to talk about. Who here in the room was at one of the demonstrations in Gina? All right. Who here kind of feels like they knew the story at the time or were following the story at the time? All right. Where did folks hear about the story? Like, who heard about it, like, from a friend the first time? Who heard about it, like, from television, newspapers? How about, like, I don't know, what? Somebody shout out, where else did people hear it from?
Listservs,
email lists, blogs, MySpace. All right, yeah, so, and you know, I think that's a really important way of how that story did get out. You know, I think, oh yeah, and I just want to say this slideshow, you know, I'm not talking about each slide, but just some images that some folks I knew took from Gina, and I just thought, you know, in case you got sick of looking at me, you could look at some of these slides from Gina while I talk. You know, this town of Gina, right, it's a town of 3,000 people, 85% white, still segregated. The white barber, you know, would not cut black hair. The schoolyard was segregated by race. You had a place for the white students and the black students to go. There was a tree, you know, where the black students weren't allowed to sit under it. One day, a black student said, can anyone sit under the tree? The school principal said yes. The next day, there were these nooses hanging from the tree. Right after that, almost every black student in the school went and, as a demonstration, stood under that tree in protest. The school administration called in the district attorney of the town, flanked by police officers. He brought all the students into an assembly, kind of like this. The assembly, like most of the rest of the school, was divided by race. Directing his remark at the black students, he said, "You need to stop making trouble, or I can make your lives disappear with the stroke of a pen." This season of racial tension continued on in the school over the next semester. There was fights where black students were beaten up, no one was charged. There was a school dance where there was mostly white kids. A black kid came and he was hit with a bottle, and none of the white kids were charged. There was a white student, or a white former student, took a shotgun and threatened some black students at a convenience store. the black students took the gun and were charged with theft for the gun. The white former student wasn't charged with anything. Then, of course, there was a school fight where a white student was beaten up. Six black students who may or may not have been involved in the fight, but were some of the organizers of the standing under that tree, were charged with attempted murder, faced a lifetime in prison, right? I think we all know the basic outline of that story. That all happened in 2006, right, up into December of 2006. And then all through months of 2007, the family members were trying to organize, trying to spread the word about this case. In this very small town that most people, even in Louisiana, had never heard of, they were going out and having demonstrations, they were having press conferences, they were writing letters to the editor, letters to politicians, doing whatever they could to get the story out. And they were, you know, the entire infrastructure of this town, the political power structure of this town was standing against them. But they kept organizing and fighting to get the word out, and they did not give up against all this pressure. And it took many months. I first heard about the story from a lawyer with an organization here called Juvenile Justice Project of Louisiana. They worked with folks up in the town because there's a notorious youth prison there, and they had helped to close this notorious youth prison in the town. So they knew people from the town, and this lawyer kind of documented what was happening in the town, put in an email, sent it out. I got that email. Months later, of the family continued to do whatever they could to try and organize. You know, I came up there and wrote the first story that someone from outside of that part of Louisiana had written. There was a reporter from the Alexandria paper who had been writing stories for a while. There was a radio journalist from also from Alexandria who had been writing stories. This radio journalist, Tony Brown, who I think had been really like in that region getting the word out. In Lafayette, Louisiana, there was a community access TV show called The Community Defender that had been doing stories and getting the word out, you know, in their region. And then even in the time, you know, after that story that I wrote came out, soon after that there was a BBC story, there was a Chicago Tribune story, there was AP Wire story. The word was getting out, but still, you know, still just kind of trickling news. And I think the black blogosphere especially really helped to launch the story and move it even further. That's when people started, I think, emailing about it, putting it on Facebook and MySpace. People, you know, you had some black radio stations starting to do the story. And then I also work with a show called Democracy Now! Does anyone know Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Did their first story, and the families had like a legal defense fund that they were raising money for. They had literally zero money in this fund. They'd had it for about 6 months. That Democracy Now! Story ran, and within 5 days, they had $50,000 in their legal defense fund. So, you know, that I think really helped to bring that up to a major audience. Right around that time, a reporter named Jesse Muhammad did a story for it for the Final Call newspaper. That also, you know, brought it up to a whole nother level. And that same reporter, Jesse Muhammad, sees himself as not just a reporter, but also an organizer. And so not only did he do the story, but he actually contacted the student government of every historically black college and university in the country and said, you know, do you know about this? We need to organize around this, and started organizing conference calls that people could be on. And bring people together that way, you know. You know, at this point, I think things really, really started moving, and people really started organizing. This town of 3,000 people, you had in July of that year a demonstration of 300 people, which was the first mass demonstration anyone remembered in that town, and you know, was a pretty amazing sight. You know, Jesse tells a story of how like he was like we were all going there, and and you know, at this point, we're gonna, you know, march through the whole town. We're gonna march through the entire town, and then we get there and we realize the entire town is not that much. We were like, no justice, no. And then it's like, all right, that's it. We marched through the entire town. but you know, we did march through that entire town, and people, you know, continued to spread the word and continued to build for September 20th of this year, a mass demonstration. there were so many people, I think it's impossible to know how many people were there. Many people were in buses that couldn't even get in, that were blocked by the police. I think a safe estimate is 40,000 people came to this town. The hope was that this was the birth, as some people said, of a new 21st century civil rights movement. In the town, I think it definitely had an effect. The district attorney was forced to reduce charges against a lot of the kids. They were no longer facing long sentences. Michael Bell, who had already been convicted, had the charges against him dropped and had like a retrial declared, was eventually able to get out of jail. The other kids still face those charges and still face this trial over their head. I think the district attorney knows because of the national attention, he can't really move forward. But, everything is not okay for those kids. And I think people may have heard that Michael Bell actually had a suicide attempt recently, because this pressure, I think, was very painful for this young man. And there was very little in the way of resources or support for him. But still, I would say those young men are in a much better situation than most African Americans involved in the criminal justice system in the South or in anywhere in this country. So the situation is not solved, and we should be keeping our mind. But they're in a much better situation than when they were facing life in prison 2 years ago. I think if Gina is really to mean something, though, it has to mean something beyond the lives of those six young men. It has to mean that we're really going to challenge this overall criminal justice system and find the Gina in our own towns, right? Because there is a Gina in every town. And you have, who saw that footage from the BART police in Oakland of them shooting that young man? I encourage you to look for that online, those that haven't seen it. I'm very cynical about police, and I feel like I've seen a lot of stuff, but I've never seen anything so cold blood. I mean, people got on their camera phone, this cop literally had a guy on the ground, pulled out his gun and shot him right in the back. And you have mass demonstrations in Oakland about that. You also had a young man here in New Orleans on the same day, this was on New Year's Day, that was shot in the back here, right? I believe it was 14 bullets in his back. There's a Gina in every town. You have, these cases of prosecutorial misconduct, the discretion given to prosecutors where they can choose who to go after and who they choose not to. You have this entire system, this entire prison industrial complex, that chooses who it goes after and goes after people in disparate and different ways. And I think if Gina is going to mean something, it has to mean that we're going to be challenging all these cases. And I think another lesson from Gina is that the corporate media can only bring you so far. How am I doing for time, Bart? Thank you. The corporate media can only bring you so far. So, it's the grassroots media that made that story, and then eventually the corporate media came on, right? And so then it became the story. The New York Times did not cover the story until September 20th, until the day of that mass demonstration of 40,000 people. Most of the other media got on a little bit sooner, especially CNN, I think, kind of really started picking it up on it sooner. But none of them picked it up until people made it a story, until grassroots media, until radio shows. I think especially Michael Bazin's show and Steve Harvey's show, these shows that weren't really known for their political content, started talking about it every single day. But even they did not get on it until folks like Jesse Muhammad from The Final Call and folks like Democracy Now! And folks just in their MySpace and Facebook and emails made this a story that they couldn't ignore. And the other part about relying on the corporate media is the corporate media, even when they're covering the story for you, tomorrow they will still turn around against you. So Gina became the story, and I think most of the media kind of covered the story fairly well during that time before September 20th. But then after that story had already been told, and so if reporters wanted to continue to do the story, the way the corporate media works, the only story they could do is to say how the other story wasn't really a story, right? Because that what became like the new story. So then all the media started doing a story of how there wasn't really racism in Gina. And the demonstrations weren't really for anything, right? And I think the Christian Science Monitor did a story that they should be especially ashamed of that was written, actually, by the editor of the Gina Times, which is this white newspaper with a staff of two, a father and a son, in Gina, that's like this like four-page newspaper. So somehow he gets a column in the Christian Science Monitor, and he writes about how there was no story in Gina. And I encourage you to look up this story online if you can. He polishes up a little bit, but basically, if I can sum up his argument, it's basically we didn't have any trouble with black people in this town until all these out-of-towners came and riled them up. That's basically his perspective. He was like, no black people here in Gina thought there was any racism. It's all these out-of-towners. Everybody, all the black people here were really happy and everything was fine. And you know, the Christian Science Monitor should be ashamed of running that, but that's the way the corporate media works. You know, so I think the lesson ultimately, I'm like looking down, what is the lesson of all this? No, the lesson is that, you know, we need a media that is accountable to and a part of our movements. It's not just enough to, you know, to be thinking about these stories, but you really need to be accountable to the communities that are storing, that you're covering. And I think what happened to Michael Bell is a good example. You know, I think folks in Gina really thought that CNN and all these folks were their friends, you know, but they were their friends for that one day, and then they went on to the next story. And the young men that faced all this media glare and publicity, you know, that really did a serious damage to their lives, and there are very few people that were looking after them. The people that were looking after them were grassroots folks from New Orleans. Some of the organizations from the city here in New Orleans that went and supported were folks from Critical Resistance, the People's Institute for Survival and Beyond, Family and Friends of Louisiana's Incarcerated Children. They were from the very beginning being like, we need to find out how we can give emotional support to the kids and to their family members that have been through this. And we need to make sure that we're still there in 6 months, in 1 year, and in 2 years. And I think that grassroots media has that same perspective. If it's accountable, it means that you're still caring about the story. You're not just the friend of the subject while you're interviewing him that day, but this is really your community, and you really feel accountable. And that when the media glare and you know, this doesn't get big hits for your blog or whatever in a year, that you'll still be there and still be accountable. And I think, you know, whatever profession you go in, I think probably most of you are going to be doctors, right? That's how you roll, Xavier, right? And any profession you do, I think accountability is key, and accountability to your community. And so I think that's a lesson that all of us can learn. All right, thank you.